very well funded, and that funding has deteriorated. So the board looked at the contributions, what we thought we might get in investment returns, expecting that we are not going to see the high double-digit 16, 18, 20% returns we saw in the 90s, and decided we needed to balance contributions and investments with our benefits. And so they are proposing that under current law, retirees are expected to get a 2.5% increase every January 1st. That's a fixed amount. We are proposing we reduce that to 1% each year until we get back to 90% funded in each of these plans. We are asking employees in the general plan to pay 0.25% of pay more, employers to match that for a total of one half of 1% contribution increase. We're also asking for a 1/2 of 1% contribution rate increase in the police and fire fund, 0.2 from employees, 0.3 from employers. On the other benefits side, we currently pay to people who have left the system. We calculate a benefit the day they leave. We give them interest at 3% compounded annually on that monthly benefit until they reach age 55, and 5% thereafter until they start to collect. That's what we call deferred augmentation. We are proposing that we also reduce that interest going forward prospectively to 1%, so it matches what we're proposing for our retirees. We are proposing 5-year vesting for our general plan members for all those people enrolled in the plan as of July 1st. Current vesting is 3 years for all of our plans. We are proposing 5 years for the general plan. The police and fire membership has proposed that we move to 10-year full vesting for that group, starting at 50% vested at 5 years and incrementally going up to full vesting at 10 years. We want to reduce interest on the refunds we pay to people who withdraw from the system and just take their balance in account from 6% to 4%. And we're also proposing that we eliminate interest on the accounts of withheld pensions for people who have returned to work and their pensions are suspended because they make over a certain earnings limit each year. On page 6, slide 11, what it saves the PERA plans. When we look at savings and report that to you, we look at it in terms of what impact does it have on the contributions we need to collect on all the salaries that are being reported to our plans. So in the PERA general plan, reducing the annual adjustment for retirees from 2.5% to 1% each year saves 3.6% of pay in terms of what we need to collect in contributions. Changing deferred interest saves about 0.5%. We're asking to increase contributions about 0.5%. We're asking the Pension Commission to approve the assumptions proposed by our actuary. That is recognizing that people are living longer, recognizing that our members are not receiving as high a salary increases as we are proposing in our forecast. That will cost us some money. But the expected total savings is 4.15% of pay. On an actuarial deficiency of 2.67 in our assumption change, we will be ahead this coming year by about 1.5% of pay, which helps solve part of that market, that future deficiency we know we can expect. In our police and fire fund, adjusting the annual increase saves 9.45% of pay because these individuals are not covered by Social Security. They can retire earlier. They have a higher formula because they don't get Social Security for their public employment, and they do live a long time. So retiring at 55 and having a longer life expectancy means that annual adjustment has a significant cost to the plan over time. Reducing the deferred interest for that plan, increasing contributions, we save 10.4% of pay. It solves the actuarial deficiency. It cuts into the market value deficiency considerably. Page 6, slide 12 is just a quick picture for you that says, in our general plan at 54% market value funded, if we do nothing, and we are fortunate to earn 8.5% going forward over the next 20 years, that plan will fall to 47% funded. It doesn't fall as dramatically as some of the other plans because we are already collecting quite a bit of money toward our unfunded. We have a 13% contribution rate between members and employers. 38% of the money coming in through that contribution each year is already going to pay off the unfunded liability we had before this recent market decline. So that puts us a little bit more stable, but it still makes our funded line go down and not up. If the
Representative Rowe.
Very quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on slide 12, is there a best practices or a percentage of funded that one would want to be in an ideal situation?
Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, the state of Minnesota, the legislature, directs us to be 100% funded and gives us a target date for that. Mr. Bergstrom can share with you the experience of the MSRS general plan. It is really comfortable to be above 90%, 95%, but 100% is the target. And the other, the red line in conclusion is if our assumption, if our recommendations are adopted, and we have 3 years of good returns at 11% is what we chose, and we've already earned about 15% this year since July 1, we can see our general plan grow back to about 86% funded over the next 20 years. But it will take sacrifice. It will take reducing the growth of our liabilities through the benefit payouts, and it will take revenue to get this plan back on track, as well as the police and fire plan.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Good morning. My name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System.
Mr. Bergstrom, wait a second. We've got Representative Anderson, I think, had a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Given the economy and our aging demographics, in your opinion, is there a structural problem with defined benefit plans, do you think?
Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, we still firmly believe that defined benefit plans are the better approach. We have seen studies that show that they, if you target a certain benefit level, a defined benefit plan can achieve that benefit level at about 46% less cost than a defined contribution plan. Defined benefit plans, particularly in the public sector, because we are an open, ongoing entity, we will always need the services provided by our public employees. We don't need to worry about that end date, that close date. And so you can use the advantage of pooling longevity, pooling your market, the investments of your assets, and that generates lower fees and transaction costs for you, which is what helps create that 46% lower cost for defined benefit. So while I understand that there is a place for defined contribution, we still believe that defined benefit plans, if they are managed properly, that you can get a better bang for your buck, I guess, is the term that is used.
Representative Kiffmeyer, I think I saw it first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, this kind of issue of defined benefits and some of these things, but I think it's also how it's structured. And one of the things that I remember, there was a period of time, 5 or 6 years, and you look at these benefit increases, limiting it to 2.5 or 2. There are two factors, and you can confirm if this was true for PARA. I know it was for MSRS, but that it was an average of the 5-year gains, and there was a formula. And when we had the fat years and we had that 134%, the effort was to try and do an average of 20 years of the overall gains of the fund instead of that 5 years, and that was rejected by the legislature. Had that been accepted and earlier, we could have gone to an average of 20 years instead of having 5 or 6 years with pensioners getting double-digit increases in their retirement, some of them doubling or even tripling during those fat years of time, which, of course, now is going forward at a much higher level. But that is, in part, a legislature during those good times not taking the advice of the board and others at that time who tried to do that, and the retirees who were enjoying that, which we certainly appreciate. That was great, but we're suffering for it now. And so I think it's also not just whether it's defined benefit, but it's also how it is structured, and that when we have good years, we don't get overconfident and use that up and then suffer for it later. And so the retirees now, others had really good years, some others now are not having it so good, and we should really be fair to all retirees in this kind of a system. So we did make that change to 20. We did use up that excess, so we're kind of stuck with where we're at right now. But I just wanted to comment, because of Representative Anderson, of just giving a little bit big picture of that defined benefit and how it is structured really matters.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Vanek knows about my concern about the 8.5%. And what I'm wondering, I don't think that that's sustainable in the long haul. It may have been reasonable here in recent times. But, Ms. Vanek, can you give us some sense of what the standard is among other defined benefit programs around the country in terms of what kind of actuarially sound return might you expect?
Ms. Vanek or Mr. Bergstrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, we've seen a number of systems around the country modify their actuarial assumption over the past several years. I think on average 8% is what the return assumption is at this point in time. 7.9% I think was what the actuary discovered when she did some analysis for us. Our board wants to lower this assumed rate of return. We do have to be careful and cautious in our approach to doing so. If we lowered our 8.5% assumed return at this point in time to 8%, we would have to increase contributions in our general plan by over 2% of pay. So what the board, so understanding that when you come out of a recession of this depth, you none of us know what's going to happen now, but generally can expect that your market returns are going to be a little better for a few years. And so the board has asked us to figure out how we can work with the State Board of Investment staff and our actuaries to possibly incrementally bring that rate down from 8.5 to possibly 8.4, or some way to ratchet it down to get to 8%, which seems to be the average reasonable rate currently, so that it doesn't have a significant impact on our contribution requirements, because otherwise we have to go to the members and the employers to pay more to make up that difference. So, yes, you did share with me your concern about the 8.5%. Based on the asset allocation the State Board is using right now, they've done some recent studies and feel confident they can hit that return for us for the next few years. But we do have to be diligent about figuring out a way to bring it down.
Is that Blaine?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a very real concern and issue that we ought to be addressing as a legislative body. We want to be realistic, and I don't think 8.5% is realistic going forward in this economy that we're currently experiencing.
Representative Lang, we have two members of the Pension Commission on this committee. The bill will come to this committee first, as it has in years past, and Representative Kahn is next.
Mr. Chairman and all members, you are all, as I recall, 100% covered by the State Board of Investment, does all your investments, there's no independent. And do you take an interest in what they do? Do you kind of follow? For example, did the State Board of Investment have any asset allocation into real estate in the current market? And did we've seen some shocking problems with the CalPERS retirement fund in terms of what happened with their investments in Peter in Stuyvesant Village and Peter Cooper in New York, which people might have thought was a great investment. Did we get into any of that?
Ms. Vanek?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, Mr. Bicker is here. Yes, we do take an interest. We do follow what's going on, but Mr. Bicker has more of those kinds of details. I can say that we're not in the collateralized debt instruments that wreaked havoc, but I understand we had investments in those investment banks that were carrying those collateralized debt instruments. Am I speaking correctly, Mr. Bicker?
I believe he's coming down.
The specific question, I guess, is I'm interested in how did anything happen to us comparable to what happened to, or how would it compare to what happened to the CalPERS investment fund? I imagine you
Representative Kahn, why don't we let the new presenter identify himself and answer your first question, and then we can go to the second. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Howard Becker. I'm the director of the State Investment Board. First question, as I understood, was related to real estate. We have a relatively small component in real estate. We have about 3% of our portfolio in real estate. Real estate has not been a good place to be over the last couple of years. Our real estate's probably down 20%. But our real estate is not the highly leveraged components that you've seen. I think Representative Kahn may be alluding to like the Sturdivant deal that was in New York City. We did not participate in that at all. CalPERS has, put this way, they are a little more aggressive in some of their real estate. They made a $1 billion land deal outside of L.A. that unfortunately they lost a little over $1 billion on because they actually leveraged it. They did the Sturdivant deal in New York, as did Florida, and lost their entire investments. We have none of those.
Representative Kahn, did that answer both questions?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean,
Representative Kahn.
Yes. And I have another question.
Yes, go ahead.
The other question is that the whole concept of the amortization date, does every state, every plan kind of, is this 30 years very common for public plans? And what would be the effect on, what would be the effect if that date were extended?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, 30 is a very standard amortization period. The financial requirement by the GFOA is not to go beyond 30-year amortization. So, you know, extending it to 40 or 50, and quite frankly, you don't get a whole lot when you start going out longer than 30 years as far as current contribution rate. So 30 is the standard.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, if 30 is the standard, is there any prohibition against making it a rolling 30-year period?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I don't think there is any necessarily standard in not having, or you could probably go to a rolling 30 years. One of the issues with that is you never pay off your debt that way. It's like refinancing your home every
right.
year. So as part of MSRS's general plan solution is we are proposing to extend our amortization period, but a fixed period so that we can then pay that down.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I understand the problem of refinancing your home every day, but if we fundamentally believe that state government and local government are going to continue and are not going to end, I don't see, let's say the crisis that would end state government and local government would be more than having to worry about the pension plans. I guess I would like to know what the advantage would be in putting in a complete rolling, you know, so that you keep the 30 years, but the 30 years is always calculated from the existing date.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, President Kahn, we can put together some pros and cons okay. of that and certainly provide that to the committee or to you, whomever.
Okay.
Representative Gutwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, why are we not looking at a more defined contribution approach? if we really want to be solvent and keep the promise, if you will, a defined contribution approach seems to be the way, obviously it's the way the private sector is going with a lot of these programs. Why are we not pursuing more of that approach at the state level?
Mr. Bergstrom?
Mr. Chair, if you switch to a defined contribution plan for new employees, you have a current program to fund and your costs will go up dramatically because you now have a shrinking group of employees to pay off the unfunded liability. If you ever want to switch, if someone had asked MSRS 3 or 4 years ago, it would have been way less costly because we were very close to 100% funded. To switch now, you would, in essence, cut off the funding future of our program, not unlike the Minneapolis Employees Retirement Fund, where you now have a closed fund, and the cost of that program becomes unsustainable. Plus, then, you're paying a contribution rate into the defined contribution plan. I think the other policy issue that needs to be discussed, and I'll be blunt, I'm a supporter of defined benefit plans, traditional pension plans. I think in our country, a bigger issue than we're looking at today is 20 years from now, 15 years from now, people having absolutely no pensions. A lot of private pensions are shutting down their 401ks. They're not contributing to their 401ks. I believe only half of the employers in our country are paying into any pension plan for their employees. Our savings rate is abysmal. A much bigger issue that really needs to be addressed is what do we do and how do we set it up? And defined contribution plans, we administer the unclassified plan, which is a defined contribution plan. We administer the deferred compensation plan. And I can tell you that individuals are not great at investing their own money. They are either too conservative or too aggressive. They panic, they see changes. And our deferred compensation plan, for example, has $3 billion, about almost $1 billion of it is in a fixed interest account, earning 3%. You just can't get there from, investing on that stuff. So I understand what you're saying, but we also have some other issues that need to be addressed.
Representative Merrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just, following up on Representative Gottwald's question, I'll make sure I understood Ms. Vanek's earlier discussion about, I wrote down, Ms. Vanek, you said, talking about 46% of the effort of a defined contribution plan, if you do a defined benefit plan, you talked about lower fees, you talked about contributions. Could you just repeat, because I thought that was part of the answer to why defined benefit might be preferable to defined contribution.
Ms. Vanek.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, we have a study, and I'd be happy to drop it off. It was done by a national organization that's studying the difference between defined benefit, defined contribution, and what they found is that by pooling longevity risk, the opportunity to invest as a greater, larger group, you can take on more risk, and you pay lower transaction fees and fees overall, that the cost of a comparable benefit between a defined benefit and defined contribution is 46% less in the defined benefit plan.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Morrow. I guess my concern, and it continues to be a concern for the state, I hope, is that as we continue with a defined benefit and we look at the kind of outlays that Representative Kiffmeyer referred to, the danger is always that we're more generous on the outflow side than we are on the input side. That's the history. And so then we make it up for what? Increasing the C. We can't change the I too much except by the investment portfolio balance, and it sounds like you're trying to do the best you can with that, but we end up constantly having to throw more in on the C side with a smaller workforce now than is facing retirement in the next 10 to 12 years. That also is not a recipe for solvency. So the concern is, how do we keep the promise long term in a way that is sustainable?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, really that is the reason that we are here today. And for the most part, MSRS is not looking at contribution rate increases to solve this problem. If we went to when the markets dropped in the early 2000s, employees and the employers' contribution rate went from 4 to 5% gradually over time. The last one is being phased in. Our board felt very strongly that employees can't handle any higher contribution rates. because they're getting 0% raises, have been getting 0%, and likely not much into the future. We're very aware of the state. So what we are coming forward with is a path to reach sustainability, mostly through adjustments in benefits in order to avoid that. The plan that we will be looking for contributions, we'll be looking for 5 million a year as our state patrol plan. But for the rest of the plans, we are looking at benefit adjustments to make sure that we have sustainability. And it is critical for us. Our folks get it right now. Our retiree organization is supporting the change. A lot of our active employees are understanding we need to do something. So what our proposals, for the most part, TRA has a contribution rate increase. PARA has a very modest one. But we really feel strongly about getting us back on track. As Representative Kiffmeyer talked about, we did come back in the 90s, mid-90s, I think it was 96, 97, and we tried to save some of that money, and we weren't successful. And, you know, we just need to make some changes. We need to move forward.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think to respond to that, I think that for us as legislators in the legislature, the responsibility we have when we change these things, but I think we get a pull from people who don't want to contribute more but want their benefits to go up. And one of the things I appreciate is the folks in the State Board of Investment, the executive director and other folks, they're a little separate from that. And sometimes it'd be really good for us to listen to that and think carefully about these things that take a longer-term approach. So I've appreciated over the years the soundness of their advice, and I think it's going to be real important for us in the future to make sure that the legacy of that continues. But sometimes it would be good if we would take it, not just listen.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in another answer to the difference between a combined contribution plan and a defined benefit plan, is defined contribution plans by their nature are a forced savings plan. And you can outlive that money if you don't invest it properly. And so then this part of our obligation is as legislators and as the state for these employees that they've taken the money out of their pockets, the pin off of their raises, to go into these plans. That's where this money comes from. And we'd be looking at a group of people maybe in their 70s and their 80s and their 90s that run out of money. And now they're going to be back on the state dole again. Somehow we're going to have to take care of them. So that's part of the issue that has to be, the philosophical issue that has to go there, that are we going to fix these plans so that these people can take care of themselves, or are we going to be looking at a future where they're going to fall back and we're going to have to take care of them when they run out of money?
Representative Gumwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as long as we're engaged in the discussion, I mean, that is reality. That's reality when you look at your retirement savings as a total package. When we constantly make promises that we can't keep, we end up backfilling it with tax dollars that are coming out of someone else's pocket that they can't invest, that they can't use for other things. So as we constantly make I wonder how we're going to get the 11% return over time that you're talking about. I wonder what would be the cost of converting from a defined benefit to a defined contribution approach. It would be interesting to see those numbers so that we'd have that discussion. You're right, it is a philosophical question, but when I put my money in the stock market, for example, and prepare for my wife's and my retirement, I face a certain amount of risk. And I have to realize that I may outlive my money. That's a possibility. And we've seen it time and again where we're making promises we can't keep. And in order to keep them, we end up having to jack things up on that front end.
Further questions? Representative Kalin. Wait, Mr. Vicker.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just hope I didn't hear guaranteed 11%, because we're not guaranteeing 11% for anything, I hope. We have, fortunately, if you look at returns over the last 30 years, we've compounded at slightly under 10. But there's no guarantees about where we're going forward. Hopefully, coming off the levels of the recent markets, we'll have some pretty good numbers over the next couple of years. But we're trying to design a program that will, on average, make at least 8.5%.
Mr. Berger, I think that was clear. I think you're hoping to get 8.5, and
Recent market activity may not allow you even to get there. So, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I saw Mr. Bicker had some feelings on the issue, and I'm glad that you gave him a chance to speak to them. That was all I was after. Thank you.
Mr. Bicker, I've just got one question while you're here. There have been bills over the last couple of decades to divest Minnesota of certain investments. Has that had a significant impact on what we're talking about today, or is that a marginal thing and we shouldn't be too concerned about it?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, there has been two pieces of legislation related to divestment. One was related to the Sudan and one was related to Iran. The Sudan bill has been implemented. That was passed 3 years ago. And that's caused for some divestment. The Iran bill, we are still in the process of implementing. I don't really have all the numbers right in front of me, but I believe the Sudan bill, we divested somewhere $10, $15 million. And we don't know exactly what the Iran bill will have. It has some small effect, you know, whether it's going to be positive or negative, who knows. It's really too early to tell. And for the most part, it's been relatively small companies in, you know, relatively undeveloped countries. Unfortunately, over the last year and a half, emerging markets in undeveloped countries have been the best performing sectors of the world. But again, Mr. Chairman and members, it's really too early to tell what the overall effect will be.
Representative Khan, were you next?
Yes, yes. I think it was answered. I'll pass.
Right. Representative Turner.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. I just was wondering how much of our investments are invested in Minnesota, in like muni bonds, community banks, things like that, I guess. And
well, Mr. Chairman and Representative, for the pension plans, we buy no municipal bonds because we're a tax-exempt entity. It makes no sense for us to buy tax-exempt securities when we can buy taxable securities that yield a lot more and we don't have to pay taxes in the first place. You know, as far as individual banks, the State Board of Investment has had in place for almost 20 years a state CD program where we make CDs available or buy CDs from every banking institution in the state of Minnesota. That's in compliant with various rules that Commerce has as far as deposits and credit quality.
Representative Stern.
Just was wondering, so about what percentage would you say that would be of all of our portfolio? You know,
Mr. Chairman, Representative, as far as the CD program, the aggregate amount we have out there is slightly over $100 million.
Okay. Representative Khan.
I guess it's a fairly small amount, and it certainly doesn't, the unclassified plan, the people who then have the, such as the, legislators elected since 97, 98, plus the people in the executive branch in the unclassified plan. What kind of choice do they have over their investments? Do they totally do it themselves? Is there a default plan? Is there a recommended plan of various kinds?
Mr. Bergstrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative. The unclassified plan has seven different investment options, ranging from fixed interest to stocks, bonds, international stocks. We do have a balanced account, which is roughly 65% stock, the rest in bonds or cash, and that is our default option.
Okay. So if someone doesn't make
Representative Khan.
Mr. Chairman, if someone doesn't make a choice at all, they go into that default option.
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, that's correct. And a lot of people, that's what they do. The majority of our people default and stay in that account.
Representative Khan.
Is there a socially beneficial plan like TAA CREF has?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Khan, we do not have a social response.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering, I want to go back to Representative Gottwald's question, because even though you don't guarantee an 11% return looking at your slides on number 12 and number 21, you're making assumptions of 11% returns over a three-year period. Where are you getting the 11%?
Mr. Bergstrom.
Mr. Chair, we just assumed, or generally what happens in an economy like this, we will have a rebound. So we assumed 11% for 3 years and 8.5% thereafter. I'm not sure where we are this fiscal year, but we are probably in the 14-15% range.
Mr. Becker.
Updated number.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, through the end of the calendar year, for the first 6 months of the fiscal year, we were up 17. January and February have not been kind. We're probably up around 13 now for the fiscal year. But generally speaking, Representative Emmer, after you've had a down market, and believe me, we've had a down market, the rebound, you tend to perform better than you do over long runs. I mean, obviously, the stock market is measured by the Dow, got down to 6,600. We're back to 10,000. So we've recovered some of the losses. I mean, the Dow started at 14 plus. So it's not unreasonable to expect better numbers in the first years of a recovery than you would have on average.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's great, but I'd like to see if you've got something that could show us, because I'd like to see what that history is, because there are some that say this isn't the typical downturn that we've had and that we should expect some other things here in the near future. So especially when I look at some of these panels, without the 11% that's been plugged in over 3 years, the results are not only dramatic, they could be tragic to these accounts. So if there's some way that I'd love to see what it's actually based off of, and I appreciate the response.
Mr. Chair, we can provide some of that. If we don't hit the 3 years at 11 and we would just earn the 8.5, it doesn't make a dramatic difference in the lines based on the cuts that we are having. And we could certainly provide that as well.
All right.
And it does matter, but it, you know, the long term is.
All right. We had interrupted your presentation, so if you wish to continue.
Mr. Chair, the general plan, the first slide that you have, slide 13, that is the largest plan that we administer at MSRS. It is has about 50,000 active employees in the program. To put this in perspective, if you go back to 06 and 07, we were actually over 95% funded. And it kind of gives you an idea of where we started from. Based on July 1 of 2009, again, assuming a 30-year amortization, our current amortization is set at 2020. And based on the sharp drop, that just isn't, it's just too short of a period to try to fund any unfunded liability. We are, our funding ratio is 85.9%, which still looks fairly strong. Our current contribution rates are 10%. That's 5% employee and 5% employer. The actuary says we need 11.5, which would leave us deficient by 1.5. And we can take care of that issue by contribution rate increase or benefit adjustments. If we look at a market value on July 1, we were 65.61%, very much like the rest of the funds. The market had a drop. If I were to calculate that today, it would be slightly over 70% based on the returns that we've gotten so far. So we have seen some improvement in that. If we look at market value, the 10% obviously doesn't change. It would look like we would be 6.25% deficient. The next plan is the State Patrol plan. It's got about 880 active members in it. That plan is 80.5% funded on an actuarial value, 62% on a market value. This plan by far is the one we have the biggest concern about. As you can see, on an actuarial basis, it's 12% short. On a market value basis, 24% short. That's why we are asking for about $5 million a year for that plan, understanding we may not get it this year or next year, but at some point we need to look at the benefit adjustments and some money going in. You just have to be for that type of deficiency. Our correctional plan is 71.88% on an actuarial basis and in a market value of 55.62. You can see the deficiencies in that program as well, both on a actuarial value and a market value. If you look at our contribution rate history, what happened with MSRS is the state put in quite a bit of money. They really didn't start funding these plans too seriously until the late 50s. And so the state has done a nice job of funding our program by putting in money in the 50s, 60s, or 60s and 70s. And you can see that in 1980 and since 1980, our contribution rate history has been very stable. So while we talk about all of these things, MSRS employee and employer contributions have been extremely stable until the market drop in the early 2000s when we did come back with contribution rate increases. And so we have been a fairly consistent, stable organization for a long period of time. And you can see that on the history of the State Patrol and the correctional plan as well. So MSRS's plan to sustainability is that we are looking at lowering future cost of living adjustments from 2.5% to 2%. That is supported by our retiree organization. They understand that they do have to take some sacrifice. We will be looking at extending our amortization period from 10 years to 30 years. We are also looking at reducing benefits, much like Ms. Vanek talked about, reducing our interest rate on refunds from accruals going forward from 6% to 4%, so we wouldn't take away anything already accrued. It would just be on future accruals. For those employees, the deferred employees who have left state government and have not yet collected, we are looking at lowering their growth down to 2%. We are looking at increasing vesting to 5 years for most of our plans. For our correctional plan, we are looking at going to 10-year vesting. That is something that the correctional groups decided that they wanted to pursue. So at this point, we would look at 10-year vesting for future correctional plan employees. Again, we are not looking at contribution rate increases for our big plans, our general plan, or our correctional plan. The other thing with our public safety plans, we're looking at increasing early retirement penalties for future hires. For the correctional plan, we are looking at increasing early retirement penalties for future hires. For the correctional plan, we are looking at putting increased early retirement penalties out 5 years, so it would actually start impacting current employees as well. And that is something that they brought forward. And we are looking at lowering their formula for future hires from 2.4% for each year of service to 2.2. So we were actually fairly aggressive on lowering future costs of our correctional plan in how we get to sustainability. If you look at the chart on the general plan, by lowering the increases to 2%, that saves on a contribution rate about 0.9%. The deferred interest plus lowering the interest on our refunds is about 0.7%. We do have some assumption changes that we plan on making for our general plan. Our actuaries have been assuming that state employees' salaries will grow at 4 and 4.5, 5, depending on when they were, you know, what length of service. And that just hasn't happened. When they look backwards, that hasn't happened. When you look forward, and that actually saves us a lot of money. Because our benefits are based on high five salaries, so the lower the salary increases, the less our benefits go up. Just kind of as a side, we also expect to see just some kind of natural savings. Our retirements are down, which is a shock because we expected with the baby boomers for them to keep growing. Mm-hmm. So we're down probably close to 15% in the number of retirements. What that does for us is they pay in longer and collect for a shorter period of time. And the fact that we state employees are getting zero raises now and in the future, even above and beyond the assumptions, probably will save us a lot of money. This past year, for example, the salary savings because of the lack of increases saved us about $20 million just because of that. So I think we have seen certain trends that will definitely change kind of our demographic.
Representative Merle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the State Patrol. You mentioned talking, for example, with the retirees organization, getting some buy-in on some of these discussions. What's the State Patrol group's response to some of these recommendations?
Mr. Chair, from this point, I'm not sure anybody's going to be jumping up and down, but I don't expect opposition from them at this point.
Mr. Bergstrom, you've all said that the constituencies have agreed to this. Do they do this by some type of vote, or is it a general letter that's sent out, and if there isn't a response, you assume that people are okay with it? How does that occur?
Mr. Chair, for our retiree organization, they actually have written, they have taken a vote. It's usually handled by their leadership boards, and they have sent out a letter or will send out a letter of support. For the most part, what I do is I meet with our union representatives and explain what we're doing and try to get buy-in. So I don't think they will necessarily write a letter, but we generally work through the leadership of those organizations.
Okay. Further questions? Then I think we have one more. Mr. Luther?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. my name is Luther Thompson. I'm not Lori Hacking. I'm one of the assistant directors at TRA. Lori regrets not being here today, and I welcome the opportunity to be here. She was, because of the weather out east, she was unable to make it. As you see on page 11 there, that depicts the financial status of TRA, and similar to the other two plans, we have the actuarial column and the market value column. And we focus on the market value column because that other column is only recognizing one-fifth of the loss that was experienced in the last year, and particularly because the post fund has had a much greater impact on TRA than the other two funds. 60% of our liabilities are due to retirees and 40% due to actives. As you see there, our funding ratio looking at the market value is 60%. Current contributions are 11.69%. We get 5.5% employee, 5.5% employer. There's an additional 0.69% that includes state aids and a higher contribution from the city and school district in Minneapolis for the TRA Minneapolis consolidation that occurred in 2006. So when we look at the numbers, contributions needed currently are 22.76% of pay. We are deficient by 11%, so that's virtually a doubling of the contributions. And when you look at this, the focus should always be on the deficiency, not necessarily the funding ratio. You can have a lower funding ratio, but you can have 0% deficiency if you have a plan to pay that off. If you go to the next page, you see what happens if we do nothing. And clearly, based upon the current actuarial assumption, that's the purple line, 8.5% a year assumed, we will run out of money in 2032. Some say 8.5% may be too optimistic, but the State Board of Investment and Howard Bicker has been successful in the past, and we certainly, in addition to making some tough choices, there is a hope and a prayer involved here. How did we get here? Clearly, we had the two downturns in the market. 2001, 2002, the markets were down 15%, and certainly the severe market downturn in 2008 and 2009. But clearly that earlier market downturn had a severe impact on the post fund. And as you know, in the post fund, the only money going in there was when someone retired. You transferred over 100% of the reserves. And they, once you got to a lower funding ratio, there was no way of getting out. And clearly large investment returns in the 90s were not retained, and you've talked about that somewhat. We had those large retiree increases, those post-retirement adjustments. And three-quarters of our current unfunded liability is due to the post fund. But another particular problem was the precipitous rollback in employer and employee contribution rates to TRA when we were fully funded. Of course, there is certainly a reluctance to keep putting money in when you're fully funded, but once you're underfunded because of legislative lag, there really is no mechanism to put in to get those additional contributions. PAR and MSRS have a stabilizer, and one of the elements of our proposal is to put a stabilizer in as well. I think the good news is, you know, these aren't pay-as-you-go systems, so what we have here, we do have a stock of money of about $14 billion, and so what you're trying to do is you're trying to get your 8.5% on there, but you're trying to stop the leakage from going out, and you're trying to increase the inflow going in. Those are the only three ways of getting onto a path of stability here. If we go to the next page, it just depicts what those decreases in the employer and the employee contribution rates were in the 90s. And again, it was perfectly understandable. The fund was fully funded, and there certainly would have been a temptation. Had you overfunded it, somebody would have looked to take that money out. And once that money is in the fund, it is dedicated for pension purposes.
Mr. Luther, we have a question. Rep. Sembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence today. Here's my question. It's about the funding and the contributions, the employer contributions. I know when I was on the school board, we talked a lot about a GASB rule. I want to say it was in the 40s and how we had to start planning for future liabilities on pensions. How does that change in how school boards had to deal with planning for future retirements, and how does that interplay with what we're talking with here?
Mr. Luther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, that would really be more of a question for the actuaries, but when they provide these estimates in their actuarial report, they have to comply with the GASB rules, and the deficiency demonstrates what has to be funded. Now, clearly there have been other post-retirement benefits that haven't been funded, and you know, Mary Vanek could probably speak to those better, that really didn't have the rules that we have, and that's a separate issue. But the actuarial report here, and we do have our actuary sitting up here from Mercer, if you'd like to speak to her, but she could probably address that more competently than I could.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I can.
Mr. Bergstrom.
From a pension plan standpoint, we have always tried to pre-fund our retirement plans, and until recently, done a pretty good job of that. What you're probably referring to is in the last 10 years is health insurance, the debt of the health insurance and the promises there. And that's what a lot of attention has been, is to those other post-employment benefits as well.
Mr. Luther.
Yes. Moving on, you see where the contribution rates have been and where we are now, the dramatic decline. You look at a comparison compared to other states. Other states, the employer normally pays more. We do have fairly detailed pension principles put out by the Pension Commission, and one of the principles in this state is that employees and employers share equally. As you can see, then, our contribution deficiency is large. It's unrealistic to raise to double the rates. Investment returns may help in the short run, but they will not eliminate the problem. So at TRA, you know, we've tried to come up with a sort of a measured, balanced, phased approach. It's measured in terms of looking at the current economic conditions, the current budget constraints. It's balanced in trying to get all of the vested groups, retirees, actives, and the employers to share in the sacrifice. And it's phased in. The first phase is simply to try to bend that funding curve upwards, at least flatten it out. So the first phase is to stabilize the fund. The second phase is to put it on a path for sustainability. And those are our priorities. It is absolutely an actuarial necessity to fix the fund now. There is no reasonable economic expectation that we can earn our way out of this or do anything differently. We can't shift it to a different kind of plan. That will not contribute or help solve the problem. So what we're trying to do here is really lay the foundation for coming up with a stabilized and sustainable plan for the future. And this has a particularly important impact when it comes to public education. If we don't fix this plan for teachers today, it will have a severe adverse impact on the long-term desirability or turnover in the public education system 20 or 30 years from now. You cannot be paralyzed by short-term decisions today in terms of looking at public education. Public education is the economic oxygen for the state's economy in the future. And I think that's an important fact to look at when you're looking at current budget problems. So our plan is, we list here, it's a shared sacrifice. We've talked to all the vested groups, retirees, actives, the school boards, the principals, and as has been noted, nobody likes the sacrifice, but I think we've had a positive reception to this plan. As noted in the paper today, Education Minnesota has not endorsed, you know, any options, but I'll be talking to them again this afternoon. Our first part is to temporarily suspend the COLA. For TRA, this is critical. We are proposing no COLA increase in 2011 and 2012, and we are proposing in our legislation that the COLA be reduced from 2.5% to 2% until an adequate funding level is reached, and in the current proposal, that is 80%. The other funds have a different proposal. We are proposing to increase employee and employer contribution rates by 2%, phased in over 4 years, to try to mitigate the impact on the school districts and on the teachers. As has been noted, you know, many people are not experiencing salary increases. School budgets are stressed, but I think the school districts and the teachers will recognize that this has to be done to preserve the pension plan. We are reducing some of the benefits, as has been noted by PARA and MSRS, reducing the rate on refunds and reducing on the deferral rate, and also on no interest on reemployed annuitants. If we do these things, as we note on page 27, we will come up with a savings of approximately 7.75%. And again, we're going to focus on the market value. That'll leave us short about 3.32%, but it's absolutely essential to try to stabilize the fund now. We are optimistic that within 4 or 5 years, hopefully the markets will have rebounded. If they don't, we will be back here with more cuts, more suspensions, more contribution increases to stabilize and sustain this fund. If we do these things, as noted on slide 28 there, the blue line is probably the relevant line. It shows that if you do these things, and we would propose resetting the amortization date in 5 years. We just reset ours when we did the Minneapolis TRA consolidation, but we reset the amortization date along with these other factors, and you'll see there that the funding trend line does become stabilized and does become sustainable. The curve will be bent upward. Now, as I've said, if we don't experience, you know, an optimistic or a normal scenario, we will be back here in 4 and 5 years with more severe impacts. But we've got a list of organizations that are already on board supporting this: the School Boards Association, school administrators, school principals, interfaculty organization, state college faculty. Retirees are on board as long as the sacrifice is shared. And there are no benefit increases in our proposal. Our priority is to stabilize the fund and put it on a path to sustainability. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We also have the last slide there. You know, sometimes I think people think this is a pay-as-you-go system or something like Social Security. But I would add, in terms of the public pensions in the state of Minnesota, when you combine, you know, the three of them here, it has absolutely a positive economic impact. It is one of the state, if you looked at it as an economic sector, it is one of the most important sectors to the state's economy in downturns. It is a stabilizing fact. We pay out over $2 billion in retirement benefits. 90% stay in the state. It's a jobs program. It's an infrastructure program. It's a revenue program. It is probably the most efficient use of a taxpayer's dollar today when you're talking about trying to do something positive for the state's economy, and particularly for public education. It's money in the classroom. If you don't think pensions are important to teachers and money in the classroom, then pensions don't matter. And so I think you have to look at public pensions as one of the positive things you've done for the state of Minnesota. As David has said, they have been pre-funded. They're not broke. We have a sizable amount of assets there, but it have to be fixed, and we hope the legislature supports our proposals this time.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And certainly we recognize some of the good comments you've made, but I think when we're looking at these proposals that you've made here, I have a question about one particular area, because on a couple other slides, the MSRS and PARA are not going back to the 2.5%, and their stabilization plan is 90%. But But here you're coming back with 80%, and that half a percent on a long-term basis is really, really big. 80% seems to me really quite low. And so can you comment on why the 80% only on this one?
Mr. Luther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes. We had discussed the trigger a long time ago, and we'd come to the conclusion of 80%. It's in our bill. The bill will be introduced in the House probably, I think, tomorrow. It's already been introduced in the Senate. I mean, whether it's 80 or 90 is not really that material. 80% is really beyond the actuarial life expectancy of all these retirees. There isn't a retiree out there that could probably reasonably expect to get back to a 2.5% COLA in their remaining lifetime.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I certainly understand the desire of retirees to do that, but I think the interest we have as policymakers is the unfunded and the funded components of this retirement program long-term, whoever's lifetime that may be. And so I think we need to base this more on sound policy decisions and also fairness. If others are doing it at 90%, I don't feel comfortable about one of the other funds getting it at 80%. I think that's a little too risky, and I'd like to see that change.
Mr. Luther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think you know, you're absolutely right, but if you would look at our proposal, I don't think you should look at the 2% in isolation. If you would notice, we are suspending the COLA for our actives for two of those years, 2011 and 2012. They will not get an increase. As I have said, we will probably be back here in 4 years. If things haven't improved, we will probably have to do some more suspensions, some more cuts, some more contribution increases. But I think you have to look at it as a package. I mean, you got, on the one hand, is a 2%, you know, is a 2-year suspension important? Does that sort of mitigate the impact of a 2.5% versus a 2%? The other issue is when the actuary is looking at this, they're figuring the cost based upon the 2% or the 2.5% for the full, you know, for the 100% funding. So, I mean, I think from an actuarial standpoint, I may be wrong, but 90% versus 80%, I don't think is going to have a material impact, you know, on TRA's funding in the future. We're willing to do whatever the legislature thinks is in the best interest this year.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would, first of all, compliment all of you for making some difficult decisions and making some corrections at this point. Obviously, that's necessary for us to be doing. My concern is that both in the case of TRA and PERA, even with these solutions, you're projecting, in the case of TRA, optimistic assumption would bring you to 81% funded. And in the case of PERA, 88%. I thought our goal was 100. And it would seem to me that you're going to need additional corrective action sooner rather than later. And I realize now maybe we've seen sort of a slowdown in the number of retirees, but the demographics suggest that that's not going to be the case. You're going to have more and more demands, I think, from retirees going forward. And so I guess my question is, can we really be satisfied with 81 and 88% at this point in time?
Mr. Luther, we'll start with you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, the funding and the end of the world doesn't stop at the end of this graph. The good news is those lines are trending up, and they will hit 100%. They will hit 100% beyond our amortization date. Clearly, you know, we stopped at 2036 here because that's our full, that was our current amortization date. If we do these things, those lines will continue on up. Now, you're right. There may be changes and, you know, salary assumptions, mortality assumptions, and all of these. But every 4 years, we do an experience study. The actuary looks to see if what they assume to be true is actually occurring, and they make those corrections. So I wouldn't focus on 81 and 76, but I would say 81 and 76 is in the right direction. Those lines will continue beyond this graph and in those other years. as Representative Kahn has said, we are not going to go out of business. We are going to be here beyond those years.
Ms. Fanning.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, I do want to reassure you that the board recognizes that we have been charged by the legislature to get to 100% funding. We are going to have the discussion with the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement at some point in the future if we need to reset the date when we need to get there. Currently, it's 2031 in our general plan, 2038 in our police and fire plan. We have also recognized the fact that we have more work to do, whether it's a modified benefit structure for the future, hybrid, whatever. We are going to continue to be studying this carefully over the next several years, and you probably will see us back here with additional recommendations on modifying the plan. Our police and fire plan membership thoroughly understands that we have more work to do with that plan. Whether it's in benefit modifications or getting funding, they have agreed to work with us over the interim. We've told them we haven't gone far enough with what we're proposing here to sustain this plan well into the future. So we will be doing more work with our constituency groups to get more proposals before you.
Members, I have two more individuals that wish to testify. So if Rose Hermanson and Jan Untrager would come down and identify themselves for the record, and then... We're running out of time, but make brief comments to the proposals. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rose Hermanson. I'm here representing the committee of 13. I think you have in your packet our newsletter. This has come upon us. Committee of 13, by the way, represents the active and retired teachers and administrators in the Minneapolis School District. We are attempting to communicate these issues to our members. Obviously, this is very difficult to understand, and we need to educate them as best we can. What I really want to draw your attention to is actually on the second page of the Committee of 13, and these are active teachers as well as others, retired teachers in the district, in December adopted some pension principles in anticipation of this issue. At that time, we did not know the specific TRA proposal, but as you can see, it parallels. I think if I have to make three quick points, which I will, I think we want immediacy. We need to have this problem solved now because I think our folks understand it gets more costly if you wait. Number two, we want it to be fair both to the actives and the retirees. And number four, we want... if at all possible, to find ways to protect the children in the classroom as much in this process. Now, that's maybe beyond the purview of this committee, but we realize that when contribution increases are requested, it does have an impact on local budgets. It will have an impact on our members' budget. We don't have a contract in place, so if their contributions are increased, they're going to be taking home less money. We will continue to try to communicate to our members the details and these are trying times. We have to keep them informed, and we pledge to work with you and the pension plans to find a solution for this. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. We also believe that the pension issue is a very serious concern and have the financial stability of the funds as one of our priorities as well. And Representative Kiffmeyer, Representative Emmer made some very important comments about looking at the historical piece of pensions. And then also, Representative Kiffmeyer, you talked about fairness. So the main points that I want to make, in addition to what Ms. Hermanson had to say, is that our demographics are very different than MSRS and PERA. And who is in the fund and their length of service is also changes some of the components of the benefit structure and why it's some issues are important to some more than others. There are some reasons that I wanted just to highlight about why we're concerned about the historical piece. First of all, if you look back to the 90s, the employer contribution was 6.5%. It was a lot higher. It was dropped back to 5%. And when that happened, the reason that everybody agreed to that is because the funds were doing very well. There was a sufficiency. And there's always there's this belief that when in defined benefits, that when a fund is doing really well, that we'll back off on some of those contributions, so that you don't have to keep all that money in there. And then when times are tough, you put that money back. If you have a 401k, 403b, or defined contribution plan, when your fund is doing really well, you don't capture that money and do something else with it and say, well, when it goes down, we're going to put some more money into it. But that's what we have been doing in the state. And I'm not saying that that's bad, but I am saying that if we've done that in the past to reduce the contributions, then you need to be ready to increase the contributions from the state to make sure it is fair to everybody. One of the issues that we're very concerned about is, you know, our active members. The active members didn't have any responsibility for the big increases that some of those retirees got that Representative Kiffmeyer talked about. And that was a burden on the fund. Mr. Thompson stated that 3/4 of the deficiency in TRA is a result of the post-fund deficiency. 2 years ago, the legislature merged the post-fund and the active fund. And when you did that, Education Minnesota was screaming, saying, if you do this and we are merged, we will be sitting here before you saying the active should not pay for the deficiency in the post fund. That's where we are today. We could have predicted it. And we are still saying that the active should not be paying for that deficiency. Now, we want to be part of the solution. So while we're not supporting at this point the TRA bill, we are meeting with Mr. Thompson today and want to come to a solution. But please know that most all of the actives do not have the rule of 90. You can accurately say that these teachers who do not have the rule of 90 have been paying for the benefit for those who have the rule of 90. And now we're going to ask them to pay for a deficiency that was in the post fund. So when Education Minnesota comes out against some of these proposals, please know that we are, one, concerned about the financial stability, but we want it to be fair. And so we ask you to continue the discussions with us and with your colleagues. You are on a committee that learns more about this than most committees. We ask you to call us, talk to us, because we do want to be part of the solution. But our active teachers are paying an employer contribution that is higher than most, and the state employer contribution is near the bottom when compared to other states. Very important things to remember. Thank you.
All right, if there are any brief questions, because we're technically out of time, and remember that we're going to revisit this issue when the bill comes before us, and I think all of the members now have a very good understanding of what's going to be coming before us. Seeing no questions, meeting is adjourned.